ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय हरे कृष्ण. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 16, entitled Prize of King Prithu by the Professional Reciters, verse number 12 and 13. Andar bahischa bhutanam Pashyan karmani charanaihi उदासीन इव अध्याक्षो वायुर आत्मैव देहिनाम अंतर्बहिश्च भूतानाम पश्यन् कर्माणि चारणैः उदासीन इव अध्याक्षो वायुरात्मेव देहिनाम अंतर्बहिश्च भूतानाम पश्यन् कर्माणि चारणैः उदासीन इव अध्यक्षो वायुरात्मेव देहिनाम. Word to word translation, antaha, internally, bahi, externally, cha, and bhutana, of living entities, pashyan, seeing, karmani, activities, charanaihi, by spies, udasinaha, neutral, iva, like, adhyakshaha, the witness, Vayuhu, the air of life. Atma, the living force. Iva, like. Dehinam, of all the embodied. Translation. King Prithu will be able to see all the internal and external activities of every one of his citizens. Still, no one will be able to know his system of espionage. And he himself will remain neutral regarding all matters of glorification or vilification paid to him. He will be exactly like air, the life force within the body, which is exhibited internally and externally, but is always neutral to all affairs. There's no purport. We'll read next verse, text number 13. नादंड्यं दंडयत्येषा सुतमात्मदुषामपि दंडयत्यात्मजम् अपि दंड्यं धर्मपते स्थितः. Since the king will always remain on the path of piety, he will be neutral to both his son and the son of his enemy. If the son of his enemy is not punishable, he will not punish him. But if his own son is punishable, he will immediately punish him. Purport by His Divine Grace Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. These are the characteristics of an impartial ruler. It is the duty of a ruler to punish the criminal and give protection to the innocent. King Prithu was so neutral that if his own son were punishable, he would not hesitate to punish him. On the other hand, if the son of his enemy were innocent, he would not engage in some intrigue in order to punish him. Om Jnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shlakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padagamadam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha
श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणारघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणालिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्णा करुणासिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिका कांता राधा कांता नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वांछकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा हरे रामा राम राम हरे हरे भूतैर्महाभिर्यै मा पुरो विभु निर्माय शेते यदमूष पुरुष भुङ्क्ते गुणान् षोडश षोडशात्मक सौरङ्कृषीष्ट भगवान् वचांसि मे हरे कृष्ण. Here the professional reciters are continuing to glorify Prithu Maharaj,
even though he hadn't yet performed the glorious activities. So these professional reciters, they were able to foresee the future, and they were doing whatever is really necessary, whatever is needed to glorify the Supreme Lord in his amsha form, in the form of his empowerment. Even though Prithu Maharaj didn't like to be glorified, as he mentioned, it is not a glorification, rather in one sense, it's a vilification if someone glorifies someone else for something which he hasn't performed. For example, if someone says that you would have been a great pundit, a great scholar, if he had some education. So it is not really a glorification, rather it is condemning someone. In the same way, Prithu Maharaj said, I haven't performed any of these activities that you are glorifying for. So why are you glorifying me? Rather, please stop this glorification. See the consciousness of Prithu Maharaj. Generally, if we hear some glorification, we want to hear more. We'll just give our ears, both the ears, okay? Tell more, let me have some good time hearing my own glories. However, Prithu Maharaj, he's an empowerment of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he had all his qualities. Still, he didn't want to be glorified. Still, there was back and forth argument between the professional reciters and Prithu Maharaj. Finally, the professional reciters are continuing to glorify the activities which Prithu Maharaj is going to perform. Here, we have the two verses in front of us, in which the first one, it is mentioned that he would know everything about the citizens internally and externally. So that's why it is mentioned the charavritti. I mean, in the political system, to know the state of affairs of the rule and the welfare of the citizens, the ancient kings used to send spies and find out the reality from the grassroots level. So here we can see that he knew everything about the citizens, what was going on in their mind as well as their external activities. And the example is given, Vayu Atmeva Dehina. Vayu Atmeva Dehina. Because Vayu, the air, is there externally and internally. We can hide nothing from the air, can we? Because air is there everywhere. It is circulating throughout the body and internally and externally. In the same way, Prithu Maharaj knew everything about his subjects. At the same time,
he maintained neutrality. So this is the interesting point that we can consider, that he maintained neutrality even though he knew everything. In the next verse, verse 13, it is mentioned that if his son commits some offense, then he was ready to punish him. And at the same time, if his enemy's son would commit any crime, if he doesn't commit any crime, he wouldn't punish. So there was no question of nepotism. He was not favoring his own relatives, family, sons, etc. This is something which is unheard of the current political system. It's all about maintaining the interest of one's own self, whoever is connected to one's own self, one's own political party. So the whole political system is driven by personal interest and collective interests. There is no real care for the interests of the people. So this is the current affair. Whereas Prithu Maharaj was completely neutral, because he is Krishna in one sense, because he is representing Krishna as a king, and also he is an Amsha, as an empowerment of the Supreme Lord. We can see whether the Lord is equal to all, or is he partial. We can see he is both, in fact. There is an interesting conversation in the beginning of 7th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Yudhishthira Maharaj poses this question to Narada Muni. I can see that the demigods are being favored by the Supreme Lord. Whenever there is any cosmic chaos, the Lord is ready to come on the side of the demigods, and he's ready to teach a lesson to the demons and even to annihilate them. It looks like the Lord is somewhat favoring the demigods. Even Hiranyakashipu, later in the chapters in the 7th canto, we can say that this Krishna, Vishnu, has become restless like a child. Anyone can sway him by giving some sweet meat in the form of oblations, the offerings, the yagyas. So Hiranyakashipu is criticizing Vishnu. He has become just like a child. Anyone can do some offerings, then he will do whatever you want. So where is the fair rule? Where is the neutrality? So he complains about the Supreme Lord that he has actually lost the quality of being neutral. So Yudhishthira Maharaj asked this question to Narada Muni, and Narada Muni became very ecstatic, because he is going to explain how the Supreme Lord is neutral and also how he is not neutral. On one level, we can see that there are modes of material nature which are working in this world, and the trigunas, goodness, passion and ignorance. And according to which mode we take shelter of, we get a certain kind of result. And according to the time, certain modes are predominant. So the time factor controls the three modes of material nature, and whoever takes shelter of different modes of material nature will get certain results. For example, if there is a wind blowing in the eastern direction, and if you want to sail through that direction, then it will be of very advantageous position, right? So you cannot say that the wind is being very unfair. It is being partial to one who is sailing in the eastern direction. So it's up to one. However we want to take shelter of the modes, accordingly one gets some benefit. Another instance, in this age of Kali Yuga, passion and ignorance are predominant very much, we can see. So if someone wants to perform some nefarious activities or some illicit activities, it is much easier in this time, because this time is meant for that. Many times we may wonder, why are we born in this age of Kali? Is it Krishna just casted us into this time? No, the answer is, we already had the desire and we had the karma for that. So Krishna is simply fulfilling all the jivas who had such desires to put together in this particular time. So ultimately the time is under the control of the Lord, and the modes are changing according to the time. And now here we are in this age of Kali, where we want to perform or have a desire to perform different negative activities. So Krishna is actually fulfilling the desire of the conditioned living entities by placing them rightly all together at this point of time. So this is not really partiality of the Lord, but according to one desire, one is getting the results. In Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Namam karmani vibhadhanti, he says, Namai karma bhala spruhaha. He says, I am not bound by any karmas. He says, Udasinavat asinam asaktam teshu karmasu. Udasinavat, exactly the same word is used here. Udasinavat. He is udasina, he is neutral to karma. So if somebody is going through one's karmic results, it is not because of the Supreme Lord. One is simply going through one's own activities and consequent results. However, unnecessarily, without knowledge, one may blame the Supreme Lord. So that is one way of looking at it. That is, ultimately, the Lord is the ultimate controller, but we are simply getting our results, and the Lord is not really favoring or unfavoring anyone. On the other side, taking shelter of certain gunas according to our own desires determines our ability to take shelter of Krishna's instructions. If you are influenced by passion and ignorance, then we cannot take the instruction of Bhagavad Gita seriously, because we are in the negative modes. Then directly taking the instruction of the Lord becomes very difficult. So Krishna has spoken Bhagavad Gita for everyone. When we distribute Bhagavad Gita, we try to give Bhagavad Gita to everyone. We try not to discriminate as much as possible. It happens sometimes in book distribution. We tend to discriminate, especially when we try starting, sorry, when we are in the beginning stages of book distribution, we are really looking for the right person. When we are out in the street, we are looking, is this person going to take the book? Is that person going to take? No, his face doesn't look like he's going to take the book. You know, we become very judgmental, very calculative. The reality is, we really don't know who is going to take the books. We really don't know. Do we know in book distribution, we have our desire? The living entity has, or the person on the street has his or her desire. And on top of that, there is Paramatma who is working between all of us. So how do we know the desire of the Lord or the person standing or walking in front of us? I remember one time, I was in the city distributing books, and one person was coming. I really didn't want to stalk him. Because he was really wearing shabby clothes and, you know, looked like a little crazy, and, you know, I didn't want to waste my time. So I was talking to someone, I just left one person, and this looking crazy person, he was really looking crazy and he didn't have proper clothes. So then what the thing comes to our mind? He'll not have money. Even he may ask for a book, he may show some interest, but he will not give any Lakshmi. So this is the kind of thought that runs through our mind. I didn't stop him. But right through he came, right in front of me. He said, can I get that book? So I had Bhagavad Gita. So I asked him, okay, yeah, this is Bhagavad Gita. He said, yeah, I know about this book. It's a very good book. Can I get that book? I said, yeah, sure, I'll give you a book. But he had to give me some donation. Alright, he just started pulling few coins, maybe $1 or $2, and gave me So instead of, at that time I used to distribute mostly hardbound Bhagavad Gita. So I kept my hardbound Bhagavad Gita aside and I pulled out a softbound Bhagavad Gita and gave it to him. He does not tell him the cost, I gave it to him. He said, he looked at the book and he said, no, no, I want the good one. So I said, if you want the good one, you had to give me some more donation. He said, if I give me some more money, will you give me the book? I'll give you the book. I'll come back. He was a little angry, towards angry, but it was okay. He ran out and I started distributing books. And after some time, probably about 20 minutes, he came back to me and he brought so many coins, and you know, I didn't count, I just got whatever. I understood, he was very sincere. He all the coins, he collected all the coins, I gave him the hardbound Bhagavad Gita. So this is how it works. We never know who is right to take this mercy. That's what Krishna is telling. I am neutral to everyone. I am giving this knowledge to everyone. Whoever is ready will accept. It is not that I am actually discriminating. Okay, he can take, he shouldn't take. No, not necessary. Anyone can take the books. Anyone can take the mercy. I remember the other day I was in front of Crossways, one old lady, again, she said, I am homeless. She came right in front of me, and I just approached her straight away anyway, and she took a book, and I told her, this is about, it helps you with stress and anxiety. She was looking a little down. You know, it'll help you with stress and anxiety, and it's a really good book. She said, yeah, I know, this is good. She told, and I want some help. Interesting, I want some help. And she was asking, yeah, I know you people. I don't know how you people do it. And I said, you know, chip in some donation. So, give some coins, give the book. So, interesting, you know. So, it's not that, and sometimes we may think this person is going to take, he may not take. Some people just spend some time and then they go away. Nothing wrong in it, but that's how it is. So, this is the mercy of the Lord. Anyone can accept the mercy of the Lord, and the Lord is giving this to everyone. On the other hand, when we see the dealings of the Lord, even to asuras, that is astonishing. Krishna gave Kamsa Sayuja Mukti. Can you imagine? Krishna gave Sayuja Mukti as first level to Kamsa. He gave Sarupya to Shishupal, to Dandavakra, to Paundraka. All of them went to kill Krishna. But Krishna gave the mukti, gave liberation. In fact, Yamanacharya narrates a verse, a very interesting verse. He glorifies Lord Ramachandra first. Jayanta, in the form of a crow, tried to attack Mother Sita. And it's a great insult to the Universal Mother. And Lord Ramachandra, he took his bow and arrow and he was ready to kill this crow. He understood who he was and he was ready to annihilate him straight away. Immediately, this crow, in the original form, paid obeisances and asked for pardon. Immediately, the Lord pardoned this crow, Jayanta. So, Yamanacharya glorifies Lord Ramachandra for his mercy. And today is a special day for Ramachandra as well. Then, he says that, how can I glorify the mercy of Lord Sri Krishna? Shishupal, birth after birth, was determined to blaspheme the Lord. When he was a baby, when he started speaking, he was blaspheming Krishna. Can you think about such kind of demoniac children? As a baby, when the children start speaking, they call them ma, you know, mother, father, like that. But even from birth, he was blaspheming Krishna. And finally, we know how Krishna killed Shishupal. But at the same time, Yamanacharya says, he gave what he awarded, Mukdha Sayujyado Bhu, He gave the Sahajya Mukti straight away. And then Sarupya. As a step one, he got the Sahajya Mukti or becoming one with the effulgence emanating from the Supreme Lord. And then second, he got Sarupya. Then he became the associate of the Lord. So how can I talk about the mercy of the Lord? That's what Uddhava is narrating to Maitreya Muni in the third chapter. Kamva Dayalam Charanam Rajema. How much, who is more merciful than the Supreme Lord, who awarded mother-like position to Vichaspotana, who came to kill Krishna by giving poison in the form of breast milk. How can one be more duplicitous than Potana? Coming in the form of the mother and giving poison to that person, Krishna has given the highest position, mother-like position in the spiritual world. So, Yudhishthira Maharaj was completely bewildered. How is it possible that on one side, the Lord is favoring the suras, the demigods. On the other side, he is giving the highest position even to the demons. So, what kind of, is it neutral? It is favoritism? What is going on? So the Lord is very, very merciful. And the Lord is very interesting in dealing with his some of the demons, that if at all these demons uses the word, the name of Krishna, uses the name of Krishna, even though they want to kill Krishna, they may have such an inimical attitude towards Krishna, even they may, in blasphemy, they may use Krishna's names. Still, what would Krishna do? Krishna may cast them to lower species of life to teach them a lesson so that they don't blaspheme Krishna anymore. However, Vishnu says, after that, the Lord will give them liberation from the material clutches. So this is the neutrality of Krishna. Krishna can do anything what he wants. That is his free will. He is very, very merciful. So in that, in one sense, he is neutral. In terms of karma, he is neutral. He can give liberation even to the demons. So that is different kinds of dealings of the Lord. However, his partiality is glorified. Why his partiality is glorified? Because he is partial to his devotees. This is the highest quality of the Supreme Lord. Bhakta Vatsalyata. He is a Bhakta Vatsal. Atma Paryanta Vadanyata. He is ready to give himself to his own devotees. That is considered the greatest quality of the Supreme Lord. He is neutral and at the same time he can be very partial to his devotees. For example, speaking about Lord Ramachandra. Lord Ramachandra, to show his neutrality, when a Shudra, a laundry man, was accusing his own wife because his wife stayed with another man for a day, and when she returned, this laundry man's mother told, please accept this lady. So this laundry man said, no. So again, the charavarti was going on. Espionage was going on. Lord Ramachandra had primarily five main spies who would go around and find out the details in the kingdom, what's going on. These spies, they had made an agreement that even if we see something wrong in our kingdom, we don't want to tell the Lord. If anything is wrong, we can inform. But if there is any vilification of the Supreme Lord, we really don't want to tell Lord Ramachandra. So four of them, they found no problem in the kingdom. However, one of the spies found that this washerman is criticizing Lord Ramachandra. The spy was so angry that he wanted to kill this washerman straight away for blaspheming the Lord, taking the name of the Lord in the wrong way. Because this washerman told Lord Ramachandra, he can do this. Mother Sita had gone and stayed in the kingdom of another person. Lord Ramachandra can accept her, but I cannot do that. So he wanted to kill him. The spy wanted to kill him, but he remembered that as a spy, the Lord has told me that I can never kill anyone. So he actually controlled his anger. He went back and all the spies, they discussed, and they didn't want to tell the Lord about what happened in the kingdom. However, just by seeing the face of the spies, Lord Ramachandra understood what there is something wrong. Asked what happened. So unwillingly they had to reveal the mind. They said, this is what happened. Then Lord Ramachandra, being neutral, he had to face this ethical crisis. But he didn't know what to do at this point. He said, one option is to set the example. I have to send Sita away to the forest. What is the other option? You know, other option, even I am ready to be killed myself. Someone can kill me, in one sense, equivalent to committing suicide. This was the ethical crisis of Lord Ramachandra. Either kill oneself for committing this mistake or part from Mother Sita. Then there was no choice. He had to choose one of them. And then he was ready to leave behind Mother Sita. Of course, he sent along with Lakshman and sent to the ashram of sage Valmiki. So there was, he took the proper care of Mother Sita, but there was separation. And at the same time, Lord Ramachandra was showing an example of Maryad Purushottam. He was showing the example of a person who is living according to dharma in this world. One person may have to go through different kinds of suffering in the path of following dharma. So this is the Lord showing neutrality. He could have done anything. He could have even punished his own subject. He didn't do anything. Of course, there is a story behind why the whole thing took place. So that is a different pastime. So we can see that the Lord is neutral. Lord is neutral. And even in terms of giving instructions, the Lord is neutral. So the Lord is, you can see, the Lord is partial to his devotees, but the Lord is impartial in offering his partiality to all. Can you see? The Lord is impartially offering his partiality to all. So in that way you can see he is impartial. He is partial, but at the same time he is impartial in all levels. On one level we can see he is impartial because the karma is working, the gunas are working, and he has nothing to do with this. That is on one level. And on the other level, we can see he is partial. Because he is partial to his devotees. Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, I am partial to my devotees. Just like the king looks after all the citizens. But he has special affection for his own family. For his own child. And there is nothing wrong in it. Another example. If a teacher is giving knowledge to everyone, he is teaching everyone. At the same time, if an inquisitive student, enthusiastic student, comes to the teacher and asks more questions, then naturally the teacher is bound to explain more to the student. So that is not considered as partiality. In the same way, the Lord is not partial. He is giving this knowledge to everyone, and whoever wants can accept. And for the devotees, he is offering that partiality. That is his bhakta vatsalata, his Vatsalya, his affection for his devotees. That's why even in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is being the chariot driver of Partha, of Arjun. He's ready to accept such humble position. So the point is, how can also get the partiality of the Lord? So the devotees are looking for partiality of the Lord. In other words, the devotees are looking for favor of the Lord. If we are asking for favor of the Lord, means we are asking for partiality of the Lord. And we are taking opportunity. How can we get the favor of Krishna? And especially in this month, especially in this day, it's a very auspicious day. This is Damodar month, and Deepavali is one of the auspicious day where we are celebrating the victory of Lord Ramachandra. Very special day. And in the Damodar pastime, we can see right from the beginning, we can see the endeavor of Mother Yashoda. Right from the beginning, Mother Yashoda is glorified right in the beginning where she was putting so much of endeavor to please Krishna, to get the favor of Krishna. And that is her nature because she is a pure devotee. She knew Krishna wanted some good milk, butter and milk sweets. Why? Because Krishna is now going everywhere and stealing all the milk, yogurt, butter, milk sweets from everyone else. So her conclusion was, my milk products are not good enough. That's why Krishna is running everywhere. Then she had to select special 100 pounds Padmagandha cows, feed them special grass, Padmagandhi, and then get the special milk out from these 100 cows. And out of this cow, out of this milk, she was making yogurt and then butter. So this is the whole pastime. It is mentioned when Mother Yashoda was churning the yogurt to get butter. She was completely engaged in serving Krishna. With the mouth, she was glorifying Krishna by chanting Krishna's pastime. While she was churning her ankle bells as well as bangles were creating beautiful noise. And it is mentioned that was just like the katha. And the sound of the churning rod was compared to the mridanga beats. And even the earrings were swinging to and fro according to the rhythm. So the whole scene was considered so beautiful. It is mentioned by the acharyas, this endeavor, the extreme endeavor of Mother Yashoda added her beauty. She was looking even more beautiful because of that. Then we know how the pastime progressed. Mother Yashoda left Krishna because the milk was boiling. And she was focused on pleasing Krishna. So she was clear that she wanted the boiled milk for further feeding Krishna. And Krishna was very unhappy with that. And he threw a tantrum. He even started broke the butter pot. And he was smearing butter here and there, feeding monkeys. We know the whole pastime. And finally, Mother Yashoda was chasing Krishna. So it's mentioned that even the great yogis couldn't catch Krishna. But Mother Yashoda was able to bind Krishna. Why is it so? Because of the motherly affection, because of the prema bhakti. Seeing the parishram of Mother Yashoda, the Lord allowed to bind him. Otherwise, no one could, because he has his shaktis. He has his satyasankalpa shakti. Satyasankalpa shakti means whatever he desires, that becomes the reality. Sankalpa, his sankalpa becomes satya, becomes the reality. So before, Mother Yashoda was trying to bind Krishna with the rope, with the ribbons, tying everything together. But Krishna didn't allow because he didn't want to be bound by Mother Yashoda. As simple as that. And he had his vibhutis. Because of his vibhutis, however the rope becomes lengthier, that is not enough to bind Krishna. That is his vibhuti shakti. Because of his vibhuti, he has opulence. This is opulence. Even all the residents of Vrindavan, they were astonished to see the scene that the length of the rope, including the ribbons, etc., is increasing and increasing. But Krishna is of the same size, means his waist size is the same. Still, they were unable to bind. It's not reaching, always two fingers short, as we know. That is Vibhuti Shakti. So because of that, Mother Yashoda or none of the residents of Vrindavan could do nothing. And then, Krishna's Kripa Shakti became dominant. By seeing the parishram, seeing the endeavor in serving Krishna. So this is a very important lesson for us. Our endeavor and Krishna's mercy. So if you want the partiality of Krishna, if you want the favor of Krishna, then we have to endeavor to please Krishna. And that endeavor has to be intense. If we really want to go to Brajadha, if you want to go to Gola Vrindavan, the effort is very intense. One needs intense purification. It's not possible just by fluke we can go to Vrindavan. Because Vrindavan is an intense place. Everyone is constantly serving Krishna all the time. And they are in the extremities of ecstasy. See, without seeing Krishna, the devotees of Krishna are fainting. Isn't it extreme? Just not seeing Krishna, the devotees are fainting. Crying so intensely. Doing everything so intensely. So that level of intensity of devotion service we need to practice. Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Sukadeva Goswami specifically uses this word. Tivrena bhakti yogena. Tivrena bhakti. Intense devotion service. Then only we can get the favor of the Lord to the degree that we want to go back home, back to Godhead. So all acharyas, they are actually demonstrating that tivra bhakti. Srila Prabhupada manifesting, especially if you see the pastime of any of the acharyas in our line, do we see anywhere everything went very smooth? If you see our line, our guru Prabhupada, his spiritual master, you see up in the line, in the disciplic succession, will you hear anyone's pastime that, you know, they were just relaxed, Krishna came, gave all the mercy? Or do we see they were working so intensely? Anyone in the line of disciplic succession, when you see, they were all trying to please Krishna so intensely. Madhavendra Puri, he was ready to walk all the way to Malaya Hills in South India to collect some sandalwood. And after getting the sandalwood, he was carrying the entire sandalwood. You know, see, it's not easy. And of course, the Lord made the arrangement. See the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Is it any easier? No, you see his schedule. Maybe sleeping for 2 hours or so. And see the schedule. So intense. And how much intensely they did perform devotional service. We know even the pastime of punishing the Vishakhi Sen. You know, so intense, you know. He had to go through severe chest pain. His daughter was about to die. Such intense tests. See the life of Srila Prabhupada. So they are actually demonstrating that to please the Supreme Lord, they are ready to go to any extent. To get the favor of the Lord, they are ready to go to any extent. To give us an example. Because we are not on that level. So seeing their example, we can at least come to a stretched zone. So in devotion service, one can be in three zones. One is the relaxed zone, you know, yeah, things are going on, I'll do my bit, yeah, chatting my rounds, a bit of service is happening, everything is alright, I'm a good devotee. This is the relaxed zone. Second one is a bit stretched zone, we feel a bit of pressure. We are not in the comfort zone, we can feel a bit of a pressure. Chanting is happening. I have to do such and such thing, but I'm unable to do everything. I will do this much. If I get time, I will add this service into my plate. I want to do reading more, but at least I am reading this much. Half an hour I am reading, 1 hour I am reading, I want to read more. So things are quite packed. That is a stretched zone. So one can feel a bit of stretching. And there is a third zone. That is pain zone. Pain zone is one is really feeling the pain. Okay. Was devotional service, it is meant to be blissful, but now I can really feel the pain. So these three zones for devotees is recommended to operate in the stretched zone. Primarily in the stretched zone. Not in the easy zone. That if we are in the easy zone, Maya can come anytime. If you are relaxed, Maya can come. If you are relaxed, Maya can come so easily. The stretched zone, Maya doesn't have any place. And we can go to pain zone for some time. For example, now marathon is coming. From 24th. Marathon is coming. We may have to go to pain zone. Okay, we say, now I have my family, I have my work. Yeah, that's right. But now get into the pain zone and distribute some books. Find some ways and means to share the mercy. Or if you are traveling, we know it is not so easy, right? You know, camping and, you know, cooking and, you know, going out. and dealing with different kinds of situations. Sometimes counsel is giving a hard time, or police is questioning, you know, different kind of things. So this is pain zone, which is good. And the interesting thing is, if you go to pain zone and when we come back, then we can see how Krishna reciprocated to our endeavors. This is a very interesting realization we all get. When we are in the pain zone to serve Krishna, we cannot stay there forever because we don't have the capacity. We may break. So we may go for a month, for example, for marathon, for book distribution, and then we may come back to our, we may go back to relax zone for some time. If we are going to that pain zone, we may go to relax zone for some time and then get back to our normal stress zone. So that's how it works. So the devotional service means we have to endeavor. There is no choice. And when there is such an opportunity such as book distribution, which is coming up soon, we have to get to that. One time, Prahladananda Maharaj was mentioning that back in the days, for the marathon, they were pushing hard so much, and towards the end of the marathon, they were so tired that they don't know what they are speaking, what they are doing. So tired. But still the books were going. You know, just like the dead bodies, you know, there's no energy much left. You're just giving the books. Somehow the books are moving. So that's how it is. Krishna actually reciprocates. Now, there is a feeling towards the end of marathon for everybody. There's not much energy left, you know, so tired. But still, somehow the push and the books are going. Books are moving. So it's a very ecstatic experience, actually, after going through, while going through this pain zone. Book distribution, etc., may not be very ecstatic. At times we become ecstatic, but not always. But after that, when we look back, it looks really ecstatic. Oh, that is so nice. Even though we had a hard time, it was so nice. Krishna reciprocated. So this is what we need. And especially in this month, this is a very, we are in a very fortunate time, because we have the book distribution marathon, catering marathon, everything pretty much straight after Kartik. So Kartik is a good time to prepare. By extra chanting, extra reading, extra service, you know, getting up for Mangalarati, etc., those who are not. So it's a preparation, and then straight into the fire of devotional service. So it's really a good preparation. So I stop here and see if there are any questions or comments. Yes, please.
Thank you for the mind, Prasad. This question is regarding the jiva swabhava of an individual soul. The reason why I am asking the question is that because Krishna says that from any demons or asuras, life on birth after birth, he says that Ajashrama. Ajashrama means,
yes,
moreover, perpetually, he put them in demonic spaces. My question is that, in just like King Vena, so a demon, can they become devotees by any chance in the future?
Okay.
So are all the jivas eligible to become devotees and go back to spirituality?
Yeah. In the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that, Kshipami Ajasram Ashubham Asuram Eva Yonisham. That's what you're referring to, right? Kshipami means I cast down them to Kshipami Ajasram, always in Ashubham, means inauspicious, Asuram Eva Yonisham. I cast down them into inauspicious, Asuric species, into Naraka, like that. He makes that point. Now, there is an explanation given by Acharyas to this verse. Does that mean that the Lord is again very, very discriminate towards the demons, that he wants them to suffer all the time? Say they have done this heinous activities. So is that the reason? You know, will he perpetually put them in demoniac species out of envy, in one sense? So the answer is given by the Acharyas that the Lord is not just doing it forcefully. He's not just doing it forcefully. It is just, he puts them initially in the lower species or the that kind of condition, because otherwise they would blaspheme the Lord. So if they are going to a lower species, that will help them not to blaspheme the Lord. So in one way, they are making progress by going to that lower species. Make sense? Then, ultimately, so the Lord does that till they get rectified. But it doesn't mean that they have no choice at all to come back to a higher species or to a human form.
So Jiva Subha is influencing quality of the soul, right? So which will never change.
What do you mean?
The Subhava of a soul.
No, it is not the Subhava of the Atma. Subhava of the Atma is Jiva Sarupai Krishna Nityadas. But this is the conditioning. Because of the conditioning, the Jivas are acting in this way. So we cannot say that one person will never get rectified. We don't have the capacity to say that. And we don't see it that way too.
Because this philosophy is more prevalent in the Madhva Sangha.
Yeah, that is not our philosophy actually. Yeah.
For me, the Lord doesn't put them in the lower regions, in the finals. Not because of him, it's because they are harmful, very harmful to other living entities, and they are harmful for themselves
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
So that's why he has to put them in a special place where they cannot cause more harm.
Yeah.
To innocent living entities. So he just puts them on special places. It's not that he's egotistical and okay, you don't worship me, you don't want
yeah.
me, you blaspheme me, you go there. No, because they're very harmful to other living entities.
Actually, that's the point I mentioned. If they directly blaspheme the Lord, Vishwan Chakratapur explained, if they blaspheme the Lord by taking the Lord's name, the Lord is very merciful. He may, in one life or two lives, he may put them in a lower species, and after that the Lord will give them the results of, because they use the Lord's names, so give them liberation. So the Lord is very merciful. And yes, this is a valid point.
The meaning is forever.
Eh?
The meaning of
that is like in even our conditioning is forever. Everything is forever, you know, the long time. Everything is a long time. So. We cannot comment about real eternity in that way.
If she comes out of envy, liberation, she should always criticize the Lord of all people.
Yeah, of course.
We can't claim liberation.
Exactly.
When we mess up with other living entities, when we are harmful to other living entities and we don't want to correct ourselves, he has to put us
yeah.
in a certain place where to limit our damage to other
yeah.
living entities.
Makes sense, yeah. That's right. Simple. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. Grantha Shimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.